If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Ellen Grotzian has been an early childhood educator for over 35 years. She is the founder of Let's Grow Outside New Hampshire, which serves ages 3 to 6 at three magical locations in Bedford, Amherst, and Milford, New Hampshire. Her schools are inspired by the Reggio Emilia philosophy and rooted in nature-based experiences. She is also a mom of two adult children, one of whom joined the company 2 years ago and now guides students, parents, and educators alongside her. Without further ado, Ellen. Well, hello, everybody. We are here with Ellen from Let's Grow Outdoors, New Hampshire. And hello, Ellen. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Victoria. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled you're here. So I'm so excited to have you here today, especially because your work with Let's Grow Outside New Hampshire is so aligned with the idea that meaningful learning doesn't have to happen within four walls, and it can happen in connection with nature. So can you tell me, let's start with sharing your story of the behind the Let's Grow Outside and what led you to create this program?
Sure. Yeah. About 18 years ago, I started a small preschool here in southern New Hampshire and quickly enrolled and filled up very quickly. And fortunately for us, we were on this lovely campus with 23 acres. So I immediately knew we were going to take advantage of that. So we were hiking, we were making fairy houses, we were just spending a lot of time outside. And I hadn't really put that in the mission of the school yet, but I could see how important it was. So fast forward a couple of years, the interest in our school grew very quickly, and we actually started a second location. Mm-hmm. And when we started the second location, I knew it was going to become something bigger. And so we started a company called Let's Grow Outside New Hampshire. And Let's Grow Outside New Hampshire now operates three forest schools. So we have our original, and then our second location, our third location opens up this fall.
Wow, that's incredible. So that idea of doing things differently really comes through in all these programs. And can you talk about the child-led learning in nature and what that does actually look like on a typical day?
I'd love to. So we are inspired by the Reggio Emilia philosophy. We have always been focused on play here at our school. And we say to our, you know, people who are touring our school often, this is not boot camp for kindergarten. We are holding on to childhood in these 3 to 6 years. And so that became our mission, to take back childhood and get kids outside more. So on any given day at our now two campuses and soon our third, children arrive ready to play outdoors. They may start their day outdoors. So our second location does not have an indoor space. We're actually, that program is the first completely outdoor preschool licensed in the state of New Hampshire.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And that has had its challenges. It has not been sunshiny every day. And so those children arrive and head out, either they're on a farm, so they head out and play on the farm, or they go into the woods immediately. And at our other location, they may stop into their classrooms, drop their gear, play in our Reggio-inspired classrooms for a bit, and then head outdoors. We have now here a rainbow of trails, two outdoor classrooms, And so the children really lead their learning. And we believe very strongly that children intrinsically understand what they need to do to get their brains, their bodies, and their hearts ready for more academics in the future. And so we're focusing on big body. We're climbing trees. We're jumping off of rocks. We're running on uneven surfaces. We're getting the big bodies ready to sit in chairs. And then through that, we see that fine motor comes more naturally, right? They've built their shoulders. Their arms are strong. And when they're ready, they're sitting down and writing their name. They're writing their family's names. They're writing their names of their best friends. They're making signs. Please don't break my building. So we see that early learning happening organically. We are not standing in front of this group and teaching, quote unquote, teaching them. We're just offering them the tools they need to develop.
It's beautiful. So what might surprise people if they stepped into one of your programs? What would surprise them?
That's a great question. So I think one of the things, certainly our completely outdoor class, when we talk about that, people always say, I mean, we're in southern New Hampshire. It gets very cold here in the winter. People always say, in the winter too, right? Yes. Through all the seasons. And so they're very surprised that the children can deal with the adversity of that weather. And we're all about creating adversity, little moments of adversity that children have to overcome with a supportive adult. We know that regulation of those emotions is a key part of being a successful student in the future. So they're very surprised that our children are spending 3 hours outdoors in the winter. I think the other thing, when parents come in to see our school and they come into our classrooms, and again, we are 100% student-led play. And so we don't sit at circle time and tell the children what we've prepared for the day. The children come into the classroom and they start their own learning. Parents are very surprised as how quiet it is. I mean, there are rambunctious days, don't get me wrong, but often the children are just so focused because it's self-chosen. And they also play for long periods of time in their self-chosen activities. So I would say that those are probably two of the things, the resiliency for outdoors, and then how quiet it can be in our classrooms when the children are really focused in their play.
Oh, I love that. So how do you balance giving children this freedom that you're talking about while still holding this safe container?
Very good question, especially when we're out in the woods. I think that becomes the challenge. You know, it's interesting because we let children climb trees here. And again, it's really that moment of trust where a child says, I want to climb that tree. And you say, okay, I trust you. And then you watch them intrinsically understand that there's danger involved. And so, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some children who climb real quick and maybe regret it after, but most of the children are very methodical about how they climb a tree. It's hand to hand, foot to foot. And you'll hear a teacher say, 2 hands, 2 feet. We do not let children climb trees with mittens on. And so it's amazing. And children don't jump out of trees. They very methodically come down. They understand the risk. And there's many children who will look at us with a look and I'll say, are you comfortable? And they'll say, no. I'm like, okay, what do you need from me? Can I help you down? Do you want me to stand right here? Do you want me to help you, you know, show you where to put your foot next? So I would say that's how we mitigate risk a lot. We have very clear, consistent boundaries with our children here too. And I think because they have permission to be children, they are very aware and respectful of those boundaries. We don't ask them to do things that are not developmentally appropriate. And so when we do ask them to do something, they understand that is a shift, that maybe permission has not been granted for a certain activity, or it's just not safe or kind.
Right.
So it's, I would say, the relationship between our teachers or our guides and the students is incredibly important. It's very trusting. We see children as capable, which is one of the, you know, main focuses of Reggio Emilia philosophy.
Yeah. So, yeah, one of the things that you that stands out is this intention, the intentionality of your environment and the structure of how you've created these environments. And what's interesting is that you have 3 different sites now that seem all very different. So your program blends nature-based learning with the Reggio-inspired practices. How do those two philosophies come together in your work and your program?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's because we sort of grew into Reggio, but we were always sort of nature-based. We grew into Reggio because it gave our staff more direction in professional development. We have always been, as I used to say, 100% child-led play. This is not kindergarten boot camp. It gave us a direction to for professional development. That was a major one. We're already doing this. Let's look at the environments. Let's learn about the atelieristas. We think about our classrooms as an extension of the outdoors and vice versa, but the student-led piece is the most consistent part. So when we get outside, that is another classroom. It just doesn't have walls. Our rules, which we have two, we say to the children, please be safe, please be kind. You'll hear them saying that to each other. That wasn't kind. You're not being safe. So that's consistent whether we're inside or outside. And then the teacher as guide piece. When we're outside, we have all sorts of open-ended creative materials. And we know that outdoors, when we're not putting a lot of quote-unquote toys in front of children, they have to be very creative. I was just on the playground and they're building fairy houses everywhere. 'Tis the season. And two girls just found this little corner where they can't be seen perfectly. But they were so intent to have this hidden little fairy garden and house over there. And one of them was collecting gems. So we have those, you know, so those flower filler gems all over our schools. We call them preschool Bitcoin. I mean, they are created, they are valued. You will hear a child on the playground, I found a gem, look at this colored one. And so that's one material we do keep everywhere, both inside and outside. And they were just collecting gems and counting them, right? And then, you know, if a guide wants to take it a step further, they might say, do you have two sets of 10? How many sets of 5 do you have?
Yeah.
So that might be where we kind of use the Reggio philosophy outside or inside, where we might want to level up the inquiry to incorporate some other skills involved.
Oh, my goodness. It's just beautiful. So do you have multi-age groups?
We do have multi-age groups. So for many years, we did not. We had a threes program and a fours program. And so 2 years ago, well, actually, our farm school has always been multi-age. So it's 3 to 5-year-olds. They either come 2 days a week or 3 days a week. And so now we have decided to incorporate that into all of our classrooms. And when our third school is open, we will have 6 or 7 sort of quote-unquote classrooms. All will be multi-age.
And why is that so important? Why did you make the switch?
That's a great, well, so I saw it right in front of my eyes. How beautiful the relationship with the child. So for me, it creates this little community, almost like a family. And you have children who have been at the preschool for a year, and then you have children who are coming in and they are brand new. And they are empowered to guide the younger children.
Yeah.
They sometimes get frustrated with the younger children, which we know builds resiliency and regulation and emotion. But the beauty of it, we often see the younger children like, oh, I'm just going to keep up. So they're running down hills that have, you know, all sorts of different divots and uneven surfaces because they want to keep up with the older kids. So it's very much family oriented. And, you know, I don't think that there's any harm in also having one age group together. But when I talk to public school parents and teachers, I must say every single conversation, why aren't there multi-grade classrooms?
Yeah.
Why isn't that a regular part of public school? Because you might be struggling in one area, so you can practice, you know, what the other grade is doing in that area. You may be excelling in another area. Children just don't come in a box.
Yeah, it's incredible. So you've talked a little bit about what children are gaining that they wouldn't gain, what they're gaining in your program, like being outdoors and so on and so forth, that they wouldn't necessarily gain in the traditional setting. So what are they gaining? Well, I mean, we're probably speaking to the choir. So it's a sort of a silly, there's no silly question.
Let's hope there's one person in the back that's going to hear us louder.
I'm like, well, we're speaking to the choir. We know that's why we're here. But if there's someone out there that doesn't know, like is still scratching their head going, I'm teaching indoors, what would you say to that person in terms of what we're all gaining?
Yeah, I feel very strongly. And I speak to early childhood because that's the population I'm serving. But I advocate for all children, I guess up till my age, for all students, and let's say up to high school, that when children are outdoors more, their bodies are regulated differently. Every child is different, but we know that all of the sensory input that you get from going outside, it could be the sun on your face, the wind, the uneven surfaces under your feet, the lack of boundaries, it builds brain, right? It connects your brain cells, but it also helps your proprioceptive and vestibular systems. They're developing just when they should be. And compared to a child who may be sitting inside at a table doing a craft that the teacher prepared that day, or sitting at circle time for 20 to 25 minutes learning about the weather, our kids are outside, standing up, running around, climbing all sorts of different things, and meeting challenges. You know, there's not a lot of challenges when you're sitting in a chair and you're gluing a bunch of things together. But when you are outside and you're stuck in a tree, or your friend got to that tree first, or you just fell in a big puddle and you're soaking wet.
Yeah.
And so walking a child through that regulation, we know we're just connecting all these synapses in their little brain. And so when they get to the academics, they have a frustrating moment, they're going to able to regulate better because they've been practicing it for 3 years. I mean, there are, you know, as you can say, we could talk for 3 hours about all of the benefits for being outside. We know it's good for mental health. It's funny, you know, we had a student here last year and she was just awesome. She was headed to kindergarten public school. And one day we had stayed outside all day and it was warm and her face was red and she was sweating. She lied down in the ground and she said, "I can't wait for inside school."
Oh.
Yeah. And I said, "Oh, let me tell you, you must be hot and bothered and frustrated. What can I do to help?" She was just, yeah. I mean, it was a long day of outside.
Pretty
sure she probably slept better that night.
So I think kind of what you're alluding to and what we've been talking about is I think what people are really curious about is what changes kids. So what shifts do you see in children when they're spending this much time learning outdoors? Have you seen a shift?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, we have little three-year-olds who come into our school, sometimes really old two-year-olds, and we have seen a deficit in children being able to play.
Mm.
And so picking up a material, could be wooden blocks, and not understanding what comes next. Maybe they've been in situations where they've been pressing buttons or using toys that, you know, just have sort of one outcome, but they really struggle. And it takes them a while to catch up with this idea of like, oh, I can use these materials any way I want. And so most or not all of our materials are completely open-ended. And when we go outside, so we've got open-ended materials inside, and now we have open-ended materials outside. And when we talk about open-ended materials, we're talking rocks and sticks. We have boards and things they can move around. And they've got to develop that ability to use materials creatively. Mm-hmm. And it happens, I think, more quickly here because we're doing it all day long. Yeah. Whether inside or outside, the expectation is the same. All of our, you know, even our playground outside is self-directed. You know, we've got a treehouse, but that's it. It's just a plank treehouse, nothing fancy, nothing special. Nothing really has an intention of this is how you use this, or yeah, you have two ways to use this. It is open-ended and endless. So I think our kids grow to be more creative. Mm-hmm. The joy when children get dropped off here and run to their classrooms with big, heavy backpacks, because we have a lot of gear, run to their classrooms. That joy, introducing children to the love of school and separate from your people and be so happy to go and share whether it's 3 hours or 8 hours at school, is a big thing.
And just what you just, I just got goosebumps with what you just said. It's just, how does all of this impact their confidence and independence? And when you said separating from their people, tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, that's a regulation piece too, right? And we handle that just like we handle falling in a mud puddle. All emotions are okay here. And when a child is having a hard time separating in the beginning of the year, at the beginning of their session, we'll simply say to them, sad is okay. You can be sad here. We'll be sad with you, but you may not scream. If you scream, you will scare your friends. That loud voice, if I bring you inside with that loud voice, that's going to be scary for them. But sad is okay. So let's figure out a way where we can be sad in the classroom. And then, you know, when you feel better. And so we're working on all of this regulation, the social and emotional, because our teachers are not creating crafts for 30 minutes and preparing their classroom for a theme. And I don't want to knock that completely. There's value in that. But our teachers are focused on the relationship with the student.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I could talk to you all day. So let's keep going. Do you have a specific child or a moment that really captures that transformation?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think I will broaden it, because we not only affect the students who come to our school, we really affect the families. And so we had a family a few years ago. I think their kids are in elementary school, maybe fourth and fifth grade. And mom was so energetic about her children's childhood, so excited, and, you know, was sort of managing it really well, had them signed up with a lot of activities. And she was very organized, which means the children weren't very organized. And we finally sat down and I said, I think it's really important that you understand that when you're doing all of these things for your children, you're taking away the ability for them to A, learn it by themselves, but B, to develop the confidence that they can.
Yeah.
And she and I started talking about our curriculum and how we're play-based. And, you know, your kids can come home from school and they can go play and you can sit and read a book. And she was like, oh, but, you know, we bake on this day and we cook on this day. And I said, okay, why don't you just try it? She came back to me about a month later and she said, you have completely changed my family.
Oh.
There weren't as many battles to get out the door or start something because the children weren't choosing it. They cut way back on the amount of activities. She said, everyone's sleeping better. There's just a more peaceful tone in the house. So that stands out to me tremendously. And I think if you were to interview a lot of parents who come through here, they would agree. And, you know, we're grabbing these parents right at the beginning. Their children are, when they're interviewing to come to our school or taking a tour, their children are two. And I start my advocating then. This is 100% child-led play. This is not kindergarten boot camp. We talk a lot about how kindergarten, at least in our public schools locally, is first grade. And I will not bend to the pressure of preparing children for something that's developmentally inappropriate. It's just not fair.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
And, you know, we've seen some very stressed preschoolers. And so we've talked with parents about what's going on. Are they overscheduled? Yeah. What's happening in the afternoon? Are they sleeping and eating? Why are they not regulated? And so it's been magical to watch.
Yeah, I can only, and I see it too. But there's still people out there when they hear outdoor learning, there can still be hesitation.
And that, I think when we talk about what learning needs to happen in early childhood, I think we need to shift back to the simplicity of children building their bodies, their brains, their hearts, and how that we may think we need to introduce all these concepts to them. But they're really not ready to, quote unquote, learn them. Mm. And so we want to make sure they have the other things first. So that's why we focus on building big bodies and talking to a parent about why it's a great idea to have an easel in your house. Because when your child is painting at an easel, they're strengthening their shoulder, their elbow, their wrist, their eye coordination. And those are all future skills they're going to learn when they're sitting and reading for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And writing. So I think that's the first level of education. What does a child need to have to head off to a more academic setting? Well, we talk to teachers and it's please have them be able to zip their coats, get their shoes right on, organize their belongings, open their snack container, advocate for themselves. You know, we have a kindergarten locally. They don't have bathrooms in the classroom. So the child needs to be able to say, I have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
That's really hard for a lot of kids.
Yeah.
So those are the skills we focus on. And if people are worried about the academic piece, that's when I get into the conversation about trust.
Mm.
You have to trust the children intrinsically now. Now, if you walked into our classroom, you would see letters and words and books everywhere. So it's available to that child. We have children here who are five and they're reading. And of course, they show up and they read something and we all go, oh, you know how to read. They're like, yeah. Right? We have the child at five who started reading. We have a child at three who started reading. Completely photographic memory. I mean, he was reading I Spy books with words he wasn't sounding out.
Wow.
You know, so how could we ever create a curriculum to meet the needs of every child? It's just impossible.
They're all so
so instead, we just trust them.
Right.
To design their own.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And you're doing it and it's just morphing into all these different programs and these different landscapes. And so I'm just very curious in terms of the partnership and how you create this incredible partnership with parents. Is it through newsletters? Is it through how do you get this incredible abundance of information into all these families and have them partner
with
you?
That is always a challenge.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, you probably have said this. I'm a preschool teacher. I am not an IT person. I play one at the Amherst Preschool. I'm not a doctor, but I play one at the Amherst Preschool. So it's challenging. I think most of the parents that seek us out are already curious and open. Yeah. And if they're not, they might come here and go, oh, I had no idea. There's a lot of that. Like when we take them out to our outdoor classrooms and it's just this awesome setting in the woods of open-ended materials and they go, oh. And, you know, they say, oh, do you have ticks? I said, yep, we have ticks. That's part of nature. And this is how we'll talk to you about handling that. And this is what we'll remind you. And this is when we do tick checks. And even the more anxious parent, after a couple of months, you just don't even hear from them anymore. So I think that relationship, there's just this, there's this sort of understated, right? We're not screaming it from the rooftops. We're not pulling parents all the time to see what the work we're doing. Just this understated confidence we have that they pick up on. Mm-hmm. Like we are so steadfast in what we're doing. We believe so strongly. We don't waver. We aren't like, oh, you know what? Forget it. We're going to study space
in,
you know, September or pumpkins because it's October. We are so steadfast. But we do a newsletter. Mm-hmm. We see our parents regularly. Their children certainly share. We have a very active social media. My daughter joined the company just about 2 years ago now. And so she's brought in this wonderful understanding of social media and IT that I did not have, to the point where she now says, you are not allowed to post things on social media because it's so obvious. And, you know, a lot of the parents are about 10 years-ish older than her in that age range, so that she relates to them differently than I do.
Yeah.
But parents reach out to us when they're having challenges at home, whether it be sleep, eating, regulation, all sorts of, you know, relationships. They reach out and we say, let's chat. Come on in.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible. And so your parents are moving from this hesitation to really trusting you and then moving into, you know, signing up and going on this journey, this incredible journey. And do you find that the children that are coming out of your program are thriving? I mean, that's the big worry.
That's the best question. And you'll be so, we'll have a giggle when I tell you the answer. So, you know, this is my baby. This company is my third child. And it's so important to me. And, you know, people often are like, oh my gosh, amazing what you've done. And I say, you know, I'm literally a vestibule. I believed, and then it just started happening.
Yeah.
And it has been a process of no doubt hard work, but I've loved it along the way. So I keep in touch with parents a lot and I reach out to them. And, you know, I often get asked on tours, how is my child going to do in a classroom for 6 hours a day after being outside all day? So these parents, I was like, how's it going? How's kindergarten? Oh my God, she loves it. Now, of course, I'm like, what do you mean she loves it? Doesn't she miss all the trails in the outdoor classrooms? And, you know, getting to do whatever she wants to do during her learning time. And they say, you know, they love it. They're thriving. And I'm not talking about an academic sense. We'd often don't get into those conversations unless they have a very trusted parent who's comfortable sharing. But they transition wonderfully. Our children are great at organizing their belongings, getting their coats zipped, putting their shoes on, advocating for themselves, connecting with other children, negotiating, compromising, and regulating. And I believe that because they got to do that for 2 and sometimes 3 years, they go into this academic setting that places more expectations on them, and they're ready.
Yeah.
We're not asking them to do that when they're 3. But when they're 6, 5, and 6, those kindergarten teachers are asking them to do it, and they can.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest message is the developmentally appropriate practice and what that looks like. And, you know, I'll have a lot of people say, well, you know, we have a community and our needs are different because these kids aren't doing this at home. And I'll say, you know, what's beautiful about this umbrella of play, it doesn't discriminate.
Mm.
Right? Your yeah. children can have open-ended play and it might be vitally more important for them.
Yeah, it's powerful. And it's an
yeah,
important...
So, and I'm not going to lie, when I see an alumni student and they go, oh, I love kindergarten, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. We do get to invite our students back a lot. We run some big kid camps and all of our alumni fill them so quickly. And those children just run down the hill. And they are 100% back in it.
Well, we here at Secret Garden, I run a parent-child class in the mornings at Secret Gardens Outdoor Classrooms. And then those kids who grew and went off to kindergarten and first grade, they told their parents they want to come back.
Yeah.
So we started an after-school class organically because the children were speaking yeah. up and saying they wanted to come back.
Because you are the vestibule as well.
Well, what I found was they're craving play.
Craving it.
They're craving it.
And I do watch her students. And, you know, of course, we have multiple children and families come through and students get to fourth grade. And, you know, there's a struggle.
Yeah.
There's a struggle. I was just contacted by a parent who said, you know, my child's really struggling.
Mm.
And we talked a little bit about how she was, you know, thinking about giving him an extra year in preschool, but sent him to kindergarten. And I said, you are not going to regret that because this is adversity. He will yeah. get through it because you are, you know, you come from a loving family and you're already focused on it. He will get through it, but be mindful.
Yeah.
Be mindful of what does he need when he's not there.
Yeah. So quick question. How can educators start embracing child-led learning without feeling like they're losing control?
That's a great question. A little bit of it at a time. I mean, I had mentors. I found a mentor just through Facebook, Danita Dinger. I was watching her videos one day, and it has always been in my heart. But we had, you know, so this little curriculum where we were studying themes every month. And I said, I need to just let go. And so we did little things. We eliminated circle time was the first thing we got rid of.
Mm.
And boy, we did not miss it. I mean, second day in, the teachers were like, wow. So not only our children had 20 more minutes to play, there was one less transition. We also do choice snack. So the children eat when they're hungry during a period of time. They design that. They trust, you know, we trust their bodies. And so the 3-year-olds come in that first week, they all eat snack first. They're like, I get to eat it whenever I want. Yes. All of them eat it first. They'll all sit at this little snack table and cram it. And then throughout the year, you're reminding them to have snack because they're so engrossed in their play. So I would say really consider, really look at that very structured often time of circle time. Mm. And you're counting numbers on a calendar. You're not really looking at quantity. You're talking about the weather when you could be outside in it. I mean, what's better than the sun and the wind to teach you about how it feels outside? And remember, developmentally, these are not concepts that young children can really attach themselves to. In terms of time, we know that most children live in the world of today, yesterday, and maybe last week.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So I would say the first thing is eliminate the circle time. And parents are like, well, when do you read to them? Oh, all day long. If a child brings us a book, we start reading. We sit on the floor and before you know it, there's six kids climbing on us.
Yeah, yeah.
We read all day long here. We take books into the woods with us.
Yeah.
And the outdoor learning for us is still that developmentally appropriate practice of child-led play in nature. Mm. We are outdoors. What does nature have to offer us in terms of development? Well, you and I both know a whole lot. And we have all these little teachable moments. We find all sorts of poop on our trails. Best thing ever.
Yeah.
Alert.
Yeah.
The birds are all so active on our playground right now. And so we have teachable moments, but we aren't studying bluebirds. We're not stopping everything and getting really academic about it. We are just observing. And I hope that these children have this muscle memory and they'll go on in their lives and want to take care of it because they have such positive experiences of being outdoors.
Well, you just answered my next question, which was, what's the simple outdoor experience that can give this big impact? And I think it's just this child-led.
And like I like to say, one of my mentors very early on, she was the director of the Dartmouth Hitchcock Child Care Center. And I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she said to us in a workshop, name one thing that you can do inside and you can't do outside.
Mm.
And of course, we were like, oh, challenge. Yeah. Somebody said cooking. She was like, yeah, no. Anything. There's nothing from your classroom that you really couldn't take outside. And we take our babies out. Kids are walking them and in their backpacks. And we take everything outside. And in the summer, when we really have our summer program, we very rarely go indoors.
Yeah. Incredible. So this work feels bigger than one program. And this is why we do what we do. What's your vision for the future of outdoor classrooms, outdoor education, for schools? What's your global, more global, bigger vision?
Yeah. I think we can speak about what the children are trying to tell us right now as they grow into adolescence. It's no big secret that mental health issues around adolescence and really from kindergarten on, kids are struggling.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people want to blame phones and parents who are distracted. And then I said, well, you know, what other things have we changed? Well, we know we've changed curriculum in our schools, but we've also stopped taking kids outside so frequently.
I know.
And now they go home and then they go to dance class and they're in front of another adult inside a building. So there's a real deficit. So I hope that especially the United States public school system finally realizes just step outside.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. You know, your programs that you offer are a great guide. Keep it simple. Start with the basics. Take one lesson outdoors every day and see if you see a difference in your students. Now, we're adults. We know there's going to be a difference. So, and, you know, maybe keep educating families. It's a great book, Balanced at Barefoot by Angela Hanscom. I feel like it should be in everybody's baby basket when they have a child.
Yeah.
So I think that what I hope to see globally is a focus more on nature and obviously taking care of that resource. But I think if we get our kids outside more, we won't have to worry about it that as much in the future.
Yeah. And you just answered again my next question, which was, again, what if, and then that's sort of we have mutual visions. If more schools embraced nature-based learning, getting outdoors, each school having an outdoor classroom, what the impact would be on our children. Just imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, most children, right? Maybe we'll say 90%. Maybe we're safe to say 90% when you say, what's your favorite part of the day? And they say recess.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're listening to the children, we really should be taking learning outdoors.
Yeah. And then also thinking about what kind of adults. I just saw an article about how teachers and educators who run nature-based programs don't get burnt out as much. that they extend their profession because, and I've seen teachers that are like ready to retire, but then they discover nature-based education and then they've got 10 more years on to, they add 10 more years on to their, imagine the wealth of information. That.
Right. So the quality of their mental health, because they're also in the building for long periods of time. And not everybody is an outside cat, we like to say here.
Yes.
Not everybody is an outside cat, but certainly 20 minutes of fresh air benefits everyone. And maybe they don't even know it until they know it.
Yeah. So we're going to shine the light on you. You've been in this field for decades. Mm-hmm. What keeps you inspired all these years?
That's a great question. I think growing creatively, I love to create environments. So the Reggio philosophy gives me the opportunity to really look at all of our environments and create beauty. I do believe children should be surrounded by beauty, that classrooms don't have to look like a child space. So I would say adopting some new outlooks, another creative way to look at things. Certainly opening another school is helping.
Yeah, yeah.
I am, you know, you'd think, and everybody says to me, I thought you were close to retiring. I'm like, well, now I'm re-energized. So, I do take good care of my mental health and make sure that I'm not on campus every single day. Yeah, and, you know, I think when you have the gift of doing something you love, it's a whole different conversation than with people who are doing something they had to choose.
Yeah.
I don't ever see myself stepping away completely. I think I'll always be part of the thread here. But certainly having my daughter here and that young energy has opened up all sorts of doors as well.
And aren't you visiting Italy? Have you gone already?
We're going Thursday. We're going to visit Reggio Emilia on Thursday. And I was woken to a 6 a.m. text from my daughter saying they just canceled our flight.
Oh, no.
You know, the only airline that has a problem with a strike right now is the airline we were going to fly. But that's okay because I'm resilient. I spend a lot of time outside and I just shift. I had a minor meltdown, not a major one. So, yes, we are going to Reggio Emilia to study. We will be in study all next week, every day.
Really?
From 8:30 to 4:30, we'll be visiting atelieristas. Our ateliers and schools in Reggio Emilia. And as you know, you cannot call yourself a Reggio Emilia school unless you are located in Reggio Emilia, which I love because I think there are other philosophies. It's, you know, you can throw your name, you can throw the word in your name. It doesn't mean that you're really following the tradition of philosophy. So you can be inspired by Reggio Emilia.
Reggio Inspired School. Yes.
Reggio Inspired.
Brilliant.
I know. Yeah. So we are so excited. There'll be a lot of bonding, and I'm sure that we will try to enjoy ourselves and not work the entire time.
Yeah, I want to hear all about it. We'll have you back on.
Oh, yeah, and I know it's on your bucket list, so I'll have all sorts
of... It's completely on my bucket list.
Yeah.
So, closing question. If every parent or educator listening today could shift one thing in how they approach children and nature, what would that be? And also... sharing just a seed of inspiration. So a shift and then a seed of inspiration.
Okay, so I think the shift first would be to change your expectations on what needs to happen outdoors. It's okay not to have a plan. So it could just mean a walk down the street, and it depends where you live. You could be in a city environment. You could be in a rural environment. Just going outside with zero expectations, you know, certainly you have to be prepared, have your water, have your sunblock, but allow your child to kind of figure it out. And that eliminates a lot of pressure and maybe a big hurdle as to, what is this going to look like? You know, these poor parents and social media, there's so much pressure to have every experience look like a social media moment. So keep it simple. Collect sticks. You'll be amazed at what they're learning. And the shift. The shift is really, for me, trusting children. Letting go of your expectations and how you think it should be or how you picture it going. Stop overscheduling your child. I think in the United States of America, our children can often be our trophies. And I really struggle watching a 9 or 10-year-old who signed up for a club lacrosse team and is traveling across the country to play instead of running around their neighborhood on a bike.
Yeah.
Building those skills organically, the way, you know, probably you and I grew up. I grew up in a big family of athletes. Our parents didn't sign us up for anything. We got to high school and excelled. That was it.
Yeah.
Or we played, you know, in the neighborhood. So I think the real shift for me is trust your children. Step back. Let them be. We have a 17-second rule here. Every time we feel like we need to step in and solve a problem, we just wait 17 seconds. See if they can figure it out on their own. That would be the shift for me. Let's trust children again. It's funny because when you and I grew up, there wasn't this intensity, this focus, developing our child. It was like, why are you in the house?
Survival, oh, right. I actually remember my mother like locking the door.
Yeah. And I remember when we first spoke, I grew up in a single parent household with six kids. And the outdoors built me.
Yeah.
I never spent time indoors. And if I did, I was watching TV for an hour and like, you know, just couldn't wait to get back outside. But the outdoors built me. And all of the parents in the neighborhood kept, you know, watched out for us. And, you know, I hold that deeply, but that is how I became an athlete. That's how I learned to make sure that my health and well-being were in a good place. I remember just lying in the grass for hours. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And to think that we need to kind of create spaces so children today can have that same.
Yeah, I think we, like you and I are doing, we just need to continue to advocate.
Yeah. Ellen, I could talk to you for hours and hours. One of these days, I will make it up to New Hampshire.
And I will make it down to the Secret Garden.
Yes.
We're not far from each other. You're right.
We are not far. We are not far. So we need to do that. So we'll put that on the calendar. Good luck on your trip.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time.
Thank you. And thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you. Before you go, I want to share an invitation. If you are an educator who knows outdoor learning matters, but you want more structure, confidence, and support, the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp might be exactly what you need right now. This is a 5-week online foundations course and is the first step in our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. Each week, we focus on one of the 5 phases of teaching outdoors, helping you build a strong, sustainable rhythm for your outdoor classroom. You'll get pre-recorded lessons inside a private portal that you can move through at your own pace, along with 5 weekly live Zoom sessions where we come together to reflect, ask questions, and connect with other educators from all over the country doing this work. If you're curious whether the bootcamp is the right fit for you, I'd love to talk to you. You can schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria, and we'll think through it together. Head on over to our website to learn more, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well, and see when the next Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp cohort is opening. Thanks for listening. And for the work that you're doing to bring learning back into the relationship with nature. So P.S., if you are a Circle member and you are interested in taking the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, you get $100 off the price. So there are huge discounts for joining our Circle membership community. So again, if you have any questions about this, schedule that one-on-one call with me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Talk to you soon. Bye.